Good morning. So for Dorothy, my name's Aiden. It's nice to meet you. Welcome. It's funny how things just seem to connect and be aligned. Your inspirational talk is pretty much what I was going to talk about, families and tribe. When I was moving up here over 14 months ago, the hardest thing for me about leaving Gainesville was the family that I had found down there at the Temple of the Universe. And it was the hardest thing for me. Nothing else. I mean, I was ready to go. Let's move. But my experience, my family that I had found at the Temple of the Universe with Mickey Singer and the different members that lived there full time, was the hardest part for me because I was worried I would move, but I wouldn't find that spiritual family again. And then I was thinking about it. It's like, our spiritual family, from my experience, is all over the world. What we actually find is our tribe in the area where we are located at that time. So even though I felt like I was losing my spiritual family, I was actually just losing a tribe that I had found, that I had connected with, the like-minded people. So I moved to Franklin, and I was here by myself, different weekends, every other weekend, working on the house and stuff like that. Leaving Ashley in Gainesville. And I started searching for a spiritual home. And I found an ad. I think it was an ad. I'm not sure if Bill remembers. But I found a phone number and I called and I got this guy named Bill. And I asked for directions and what time service was and stuff like that. And I actually beat him here that Sunday morning. I was already here and he pulled up and he's like, I'll unlock the door here, just a second. And so I came in with Bill. And as soon as I walked in, I had felt the energy and I knew I had found another tribe. This was going to be my spiritual family here at the Spiritual Light Center. And over the time, as things progressed, things began to unfold for us, for Ashley. I called her up after service and said, it was amazing. You're not going to believe the harpist that was here. I'm definitely going back next week. So I ended up eventually bringing Ashley, and she agreed. And this had become our new tribe, our new family. So, no matter where what you're doing in your life as you travel, if you move, your family is all over. Your family is the planet. Your family is everywhere. But the tribe, the people, the like-minded people, you'll find when time is right. So I just want to say I am so happy to be here. I'm sure Ashley shares with me. We talk about it all the time. The energy we receive here, the friendships that we've made. For example, a few weeks ago, we had Elaine Silver here as a guest speaker and musician, and we felt a connection right away with her and her partner. And last week, she called and said, "We want to come up and visit and stay with you and check out the farm and go see the area." So we're like, sure, come on up. So Elaine Silver's coming up this Thursday to hang out with us. I think we're going to take her to Highlands or something. And then she has a adopted mom in Waynesville she's going to go visit. But that connection is out there. And if you're open to it, you will find it too. Thanks.
So I thought I would come up and talk about my spiritual journey. As a child, my father's a scientist. So as a child, I didn't have much spiritual education, and I actually had none. We did not go to church. And I mean, my father he's a scientist, so he believes in science and not and any sort of spirituality. And my mother, I don't think she received much spiritual education as a child either. So I kind of felt like a little bit adrift, and I would tell people I'm a nothing. Like, I have nothing. I don't have a, if people ask me, or what do you practice? And I went to summer camp, and they prayed in the evening and stuff, and I was like, this is interesting. And I did feel a little bit, on the outskirts, because I didn't know the Lord's Prayer or whatever. And it was an interesting situation. And then, I grew up and I started like searching, searching for what would be my path, like what can I learn. And I dabbled a little bit in, like, you know, Buddhism. I dabbled a little bit in, like, becoming a witch. I dabbled a little bit in, you know, all sorts of different things. And then I found yoga. And yoga is not really religion, but there is a lot of spirituality involved in yoga. And I think I definitely had some very spiritual experiences. Most profound one was, I was lying down, you know, after a class, you do Shavasana where you lay down, and it's kind of like a lying down meditation. And I realized that, you know, all there is love. Like, all around us is love. That's what we're searching for when we're young, and that we can connect with each other with that love. All, if you present yourself with love, you know, towards the world, you can give back, but also receive that love. And that was, I just remember feeling like almost a buoying up of myself. And then, of course, you know, you leave and you go around your every day and you forget, you know. And I think that's the thing that we all are learning here, is that, you know, a spiritual practice can evolve and change, and that we can always learn something. And that for me, like, it is always changing. There's always something new to learn, and it takes practice for me also. You know, it's like you can forget to come and listen to other people. You can forget to practice your own spirituality, and then you kind of feel like you're, for me, I feel a little lost, like there's something missing. And then you have, okay, I need to go back to my practice. Like, for me, it's the meditation, you know, readings, reading books or whatever, coming here, hearing other speakers. I always find something to pull from the speakers to help me grow. And I guess that's all I have to say.
Oh, I'm Bill. How are y'all? Yeah, you're more than welcome. And my last name is Groves. It's like trees. It's what a perfect name for me. Yeah, Groves of Trees. Yeah. You know, when I grew up, I was raised in the Church of Christ by my grandmother, and I got nothing, absolutely zero out of it. I have no recollection of any spiritual growth, nothing. And then when I was 17, I realized that I wasn't being fed, that there was just nothing there. And I went to just look for something. And I went to various churches, and, you know, in my opinion, it doesn't make any difference what church or group or organization you attach yourself to. It's you. It's who you came into this world to be. That's going to either be fed and grow as a result of whatever you're attached to or not. It's like attaching to a breast on the earth. Either it's dry or you're being fed. And strangely, I walked into the Catholic Church one time just to, you know, and there was nobody there. The door was open. And when I walked in, I felt this sudden presence. That's all I could call it, was a presence. And it was beautiful. And I decided, okay, I'll check this out. So I went and talked to the priest. And he was like, well, maybe we'll check it out. You know, keep coming, see if you want to be one. But he was very inviting, very pleasant. And long story short, I started going to the Catholic Church. And it didn't seem to matter where I was. I just had this awareness of a presence of a divine spirit with me. And then there was a summer between my junior and senior year of high school that I could go to get some college credits from Oklahoma Baptist University. And I went, and I had a roommate who was an atheist. And he and I were very attracted to each other. So it was very interesting that there's a tremendous tension there that was just electric. But that's all it was. So one night, I decided I was going to convert his little atheist butt and make him into some kind of a religious or, you know, believing creature. So he sat up in the bathroom all night long on the tile floor. And in the end, I was an atheist. And it was just wonderful. So I, you know, and I can clearly remember laying in bed that night and saying, God, I am so sorry. I don't believe in you anymore. Just as plain as day. I mean, it was like, I wasn't. But I had to ditch the whole thing, the whole religion thing and the whole, you know, faith thing, because I had to go wild with, you know, sex, drugs and rock and roll. It was the 70s. It was actually 69 at that point. And so I did. I went completely wacko and wild and crazy for 3 years of pure hedonism. I mean, just downright in the dirt hedonism for 3 solid years, and it was just crazy. But I needed that. I needed to get away from religious structure so that at some point I could build what was my own spirituality. So at the end of those 3 years, I remember making a cross for my sister out of rosewood, and I still have it. And it had a silver filigree on it, and got semi-precious stones and drilled into it and then planted them. And I was halfway through making that, and I went, who am I kidding? You know, I believe in this. I always have. So I was looking for something that would be a way to express that in the most radical way. And I ran into a group of people called the Children of God. And they renounced everything. And you moved in together in what they had colonies, actually all over the world. And very radical, extremely radical, but very fundamentalist. If you could imagine those two coming together, but they were. So I ended up in Canada for a while. And then they said, well, here's a dime. You're supposed to go down to Mexico City and join that colony down there. And I said, okay. So I got on the road and hitchhiked and got down to Mexico City. And I ended up staying in Mexico for a little over a year in a few of the colonies in Mexico. And that's where I learned Spanish. But the main thing of that whole period, which is a little over 2 years total, is I got an absolute drilled in, grounded understanding of the Bible. I mean, we had to memorize it. So, I mean, still to this day, I'll be walking out in the woods and a passage from the Bible will hit me, which will tell me something. In other words, it's just another way that God has to speak to me, which is very helpful. It's just another little megaphone. I don't look at the Bible quite the same way as I did, but it doesn't matter. So anyway, I realized that they were psycho after about a year, 2 years actually. And I just packed my pesos and boogied out of there. And I was still thinking, I want to do what is the most powerful thing I can do. And the only thing I had in my bag of tricks was Catholicism at the time. So I ended up calling the vocation director, and long story short, I ended up being a priest in Colorado for 10 years. And I was a lousy priest, actually. The people loved me. I loved them. I loved everything about it, but I really wasn't a Catholic. I was just very spiritual. And I tried to apply that to Catholicism. But after 10 years, it didn't work. I was aware that I was moving in another direction. Make it real short, I ended up leaving, going into drug and alcohol counseling for 25 years. And during that time, that deep spirituality became more grounded in personal growth, helping other people to recognize their issues. It had no issue of religion whatsoever. So I was able to escape religion during that 25 years and develop a sense of spiritual growth based on who we are as human beings walking a path with all of our weaknesses, all of our warts, and all of our issues, and the recognition that God loves us fully and completely and unconditionally. And I loved it. I was a chaplain during that time, then went into 10 years of private practice with people. But my own spirituality at that point was completely set free. And I cannot tell you what happened, but it was like a voice, that presence that I felt my entire life, that same presence I felt when I walked into a church, the same presence I felt when I walked in the woods, the same presence I felt anywhere I went, started pushing me, saying, this isn't where you belong. And I had been coming out to North Carolina every summer, oh, not every summer, but most summers, to go to a Joyce Kilmer Memorial Forest and spend as much time as I could there. And I ran into a young couple who said, you know what, it's not so expensive to live out here, won't you just move? And I became so obsessed, I couldn't sleep for 4 days and four nights after I got home. All I could do was look at real estate. And I moved out here having a plan, had transferred, it was really hard to do, transferred my drug and alcohol counselor license to North Carolina, had a job promised to me, and I was set. I bought a house, went back, sold my house in Cushing, Oklahoma, got everything in a moving van and in my truck, and I was heading North Carolina. I got to the Tennessee-North Carolina border, called him up and said, I'm here, I'm ready to go. And I could just feel the energy on the phone, just went dead. And I went, what's wrong? He said, the state of North Carolina just canceled every program we were hiring you for. So I had sold my home and bought a house here and didn't have a job and had nothing. And I was like, God, why did you do this? Why did you leave me somewhere? And then all of a sudden just, you know, the rug gets pulled out from under me. So I thought, well, I'll just renovate this house and sell it and then go wherever I choose. And spent the time renovating the house. And then I started coming here to the Spiritual Light Center and fell in love with the same thing you fell in love with. I walked through the door and went, this is it. And my tribe developed here. And next thing I know, the administrator walked out, just boom, left all of a sudden. And we had a meeting over in the hall and they all said, you are the only one for various reasons that can take the job of administrator. And I went, no, I'm a drug and alcohol counselor. And I just said, no. And eventually by the end of that meeting, they talked me into doing it. And one thing I asked for when I left Oklahoma, I said, God, I need, send me someone who will guide me spiritually. Let me find someone that will be like a guru for me. And I realize now that he gave me 15 or 20 of them instead, and through a tribe. It has been one continuous spiritual walk and journey. So that now when I go out into the woods, which is my spiritual home, I am surrounded by that same presence that I cannot deny at any point in my life. And it's become stronger and more powerful each year. And I'm grateful for this place for helping me with it.
Okay, I'm John, and I wound up in North Carolina in 1990. We came on vacation. and I left my own house. So here I are. And it don't bite, does it? Okay. Anyhow, the first 17 years of my life, I spent in isolation. I didn't have friends. I didn't talk to anybody. My mother made my life miserable. One day I was in town and my buddy came up and he says, "Jim, I'm going into service one day." I said, "Why are you doing that?" He said, "I just feel like I ought to." He said, "Go with me." I said, "Okay." On Monday we went to Chicago and I became a soldier. And I did basic training in Fort Lewis, Washington. And I was just alone. I was me. We finished basic training and everybody shipped out and disappeared except 10 of us. And the 10 of us sat there for the longest time. And they needed the company, so they moved us to some empty barracks. We were living in a barracks that was 100 people, and there's 10 of us living in there. And we went to the PX or something one night. And we're walking back to our facility. And everybody's walking, and I walked off in a different direction. And my mind was going a mile a minute. I finally turned around and went back to the barracks. Sat down on my bunk. Buddy is sitting on his across from me. And he said, "What happened to you?" I said, I got the feeling homesick or something. I said, "But I learned something." And he said, "What did you learn?" I said, "I got to thinking, eventually the 10 of us are going to ship out. And I said, I'm going to get to a place and my life is going to depend on you guys. And maybe some of your life might depend on me." He said, "So I'm not alone, am I?" He says, "No, you're not. You're part of a group, John." And that sort of amazed me. Well, I shipped out. We landed on Luzon Island. And the truck picked us up, took us out someplace. Big empty field with tents up all around it. And had a formation, and they said, "Watch the bulletin board. Your name should come up on it eventually." So I checked it. And sure as hell, my first night there, I'm on sentry duty. So 4 o'clock, I reported over for sentry duty. And I never told this story to very many people. But I reported for sentry duty. And sergeant handed me a carbine and 3 clips, which is 45 rounds of ammunition. And I stood looking at that carbine and I was crying. My friend came up, he said, "Are you scared?" I said, "I'm not scared." He said, "Why are you crying?" And I said, "This is this goddamn thing." He said, "What's the matter with it?" I said, "This is made to kill people. I don't want to kill anyone." And I had quite a fight with myself that night. I did what I was supposed to. And all of a sudden, I fit. Oh, a couple of different occasions. On one occasion, I'm cut off. I'm by myself. And I got the hell scared out of me. And I just said, "Oh, what the hell do I do now?" And something told me what to do. And I did. And I got away with it. And the next time, I was with, about 10 other guys. And all of a sudden, I'm alone again. and went through the same thing. And now, what the hell do I do? Something told me what to do. Not in words, just I knew what to do. And I did it. And I walked away. And somehow, I've never been able to see who, what, or why. But every time I'm in a tight spot, there's a presence right here. And I have tried thousands of times to see what it is. And when I turn, it just turns with me. I don't get to see it. But it has taken me out of more scrapes, brought me back home safe. I spent one stint in the hospital in Japan. But Japan inspired me. And I still swear to this day, I believe in reincarnation. And I swear I was a samurai warrior one time. And when I first got there, I reported to the commanding officer. He said, "You just here because you're going home." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well," he said, "you got two choices. You won't know the path." He said, "If you stay on the base, you should look like you're doing something. Otherwise, you get the hell off the base." So the first morning, I got up and I had breakfast and I went on. And there's a big circle of people standing around. There's a Japanese priest in there talking to me. I don't understand a word of Japanese. Just a few of them get by. But that man was talking directly to me. And he taught me things that it works when you talk. And I learned things and it started me on a path. And I came home and I wanted to learn more. And restitution, what the hell ever it is from California, some kind of organization. They advertise in magazines. Yeah, I don't know. It's a picture of a guy with lines out here someplace. Yeah. Anyhow, that kind of interested me and it really got me started. And I got in AA 45 years ago. And one of the things they taught me in AA is that when a student's ready, the teacher will appear. And I spent 80-some years watching teachers come and go. Every time I needed something, somebody would appear and teach it to me. And I know people think I'm BSing, but I spent the last 50 years, I've never been sick in my life. I don't get sick. I hurt myself a lot, but I don't get sick. And I spent a lot of time in AA teaching new people coming into the program that you're sick, you have a problem, but you don't need the problem. And what I try to teach them, and I still do it, is do what I do. I'm a perfect spiritual child of God. And in spirit, there is no such thing as sickness or death. Therefore, I can't possibly ever be sick. And I don't get sick. It works. And there's a few people in town here that I've told that to. And one girl especially, she was in really bad shape. And I went to see her. And I've always used the prayer of protection as a healing tool. I was at this girl's house. I got down on my knees in front of her so I could get the same level she was at. And I said, "You trust me, don't you?" She said, "You know I trust you, John. You give me your hands and close your eyes. And she did. And I said, repeat after me. And we did. And for our protection. And when we got finished with it, I said, Father, thank you for the healing that's now taking place in your child. And I let go of her hand, and she's sitting there like, what did you do to me? What did you do to me? I said, how do you feel? She says, fantastic. She said, what did you do? I said, I didn't do anything. We did it. And the funny part about it is 4, 5, 6 months later, she called me. She says, I came home from work, and she says, you weren't around. And so she says, I was having a problem, and I knew I had to do something. She said, I remember what you taught me. So I got in my car, and I had an emergency room, and I kept doing that prayer over and over and over. She said, I got there, and they checked me out. The doctor said, I don't know what's causing this, but her tongue was swelling. I could get where she couldn't breathe. And he said, I don't know what's causing this. And, you know, she's still doing this prayer. And all of a sudden, oh, and the swelling went down. And the doctor said, what? He said, what's happening? She said, I'm better now. And one other time since then, about a year ago, she called me again and she was using it. And it works. And yeah, I spend a lot of time in AA teaching people. What do I know? And
could you share that for protection with us?
Yeah.
Like so, now?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't need that.
No. Oh, this one, it's the one of the program?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You want to do it?
Sure.
Okay.
I thought it was a different one. I forgot that's what we call that.
Yeah, that's a prayer of protection. And the light of God surrounds us.
God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is, and all is well, and so it is. I've done that with people. And they forgot they were sick and walked away. Like I said last Sunday, I said, nobody asked me. But my 94 years on this planet, I learned one thing. And I said, I said when I was coming up here, I said, I can do any damn thing I want to do. Because spirit guides me. Never figured out who this spirit is back there. But he's been my friend for 24 years. And I remember when I was a child, and I said, my mother made my wife ill. And I spent time hiding out in chicken coops and out in the woods. But there was always that comforting sense with me. And I was never afraid. And I went through my time in the service. And I was never afraid. Nothing to fear, because I would be protected. And that's my advice. Just remember who and what you are. Spirit will always take care of you. But you have to believe it. That's the only big trick. And I thank you for letting me share that.
Okay. I'm Rhonda. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Rhonda.
Hey, John, that was awesome. So I used to say I was baptized in the Methodist, or christened in the Methodist Church, attended the Disciple of Christ Church and joined it, then attended a Presbyterian church, did not join it, was married in the Presbyterian Church, joined the Unitarian Universalist Church in Franklin, left and came here. That's my religious journey. Kind of hit all the bases. When I was a child, the town I grew up in had a Catholic church, a Lutheran church, a Baptist church, and if you weren't any of those, you went to the Disciples of Christ church, which is actually a fairly liberal church. And we had an awesome minister, Reverend Wendell Pugh, P-E-W, just like you sit in, and his wife was our kindergarten teacher, and they were very loving people. One of the really cool things about it in the Sunday school, we had people from different religions come in and talk about their religions. When I was in like fourth or fifth grade, I'm being exposed to some Asian religions. So I really found that interesting. But what really, the part I think I had some, I spent a lot of time alone as a child because my brothers and sisters did not like me. So I read a lot and thought a lot. And one of the first things I wrote down in a journal I was keeping at that time was, it's not a mistake if I learned from it. At 13, I wrote that. And it was, I don't know where it came from, but it's not a mistake if I learned from it. At 16, we had moved to Florida. And well, actually at 14, we moved to Florida. And I'm a very shy person, or was very introverted. I had to go to walk to the bus stop and I didn't know anybody. And I didn't see very well. So I was like, okay, I'm going to pick that small group of girls to walk up to and introduce myself. And one of them was Karen Newcomb, who became my best friend in high school and introduced me to science fiction, to Robert Heinlein and Stranger in a Strange Land, which was the second book I read by him because she lent that one to somebody else first. But it introduced me to the idea of energy permeating things, and that we could have an effect on that, and the power of love. But science fiction and science fantasy I found fascinating because of the exploration of various social structures, and revolution, but especially creating a world in which this is the social structure, this is the rules, and this is how people react. So sociology, because I was not very well socialized in my family of origin, I think sociology became very interesting to me. How do people interrelate? How does that work anyway? Because it didn't really make sense to me, and it makes more sense to me now. Eventually, I found science fantasy and read all of the Anne McCaffrey's Dragon Riders of Pern series, which really expanded on the idea of consciousness in all beings. There was psychic communication between dragons and humans and a bonding. So, yeah. I also, when I was in college, then met my best friend in college. We actually were in the same first class, 8 o'clock calculus. So Monday through Friday, that's where we met in the very first class. And we hung out together with another group of people. But she had telepathic abilities and card reading and introduced me to the idea of reincarnation and really expanded my horizons as far as that goes. And so we would talk until we crashed every night for years. So, and of course she's gone now, darn it. So I'm on my own on that exploration, but you know, I've written some things in the President's Message, which I've put out there about my belief in the actual existence of dragons, which are, I think, fifth dimensional beings, which is why we don't actually see them much.
And the idea that everything, even rocks, are have a life force to them, are alive. The idea that, I guess my basic premise into my spirituality is what I got from Stranger in a Strange Land, which is that I am God and thou art God, and all that rocks or all that has self-awareness is God. And there was something else I wanted to say, but I don't remember what it was. So I guess that was the important thing. Oh, I know. The mantra that that came to me when we were meditating this morning. I love us, and we are beautiful. And that was me speaking to every cell in my body, because every cell in my body has an independent consciousness and works together to be me and to allow me to be in three-dimensional form. So I was reaffirming. They seem to like that idea of being recognized, because I go around my world feeling like, gosh, I'm in pain. Why are you hurting me? Instead of saying, I love you. Thank you for being me. And thank you for being us. So that was a little reminder for me today. Thank you.
My name is Tom, and unlike Bill's experience, I always say my parents made the mistake of sending me to Catholic school. So that was, for me, a horrible experience, and one where actually the Cuban Missile Crisis led me to a very early conclusion that power equals abuse. But that's not what I'm going to talk about. But Catholic Church did, or Catholic school rather, did precipitate my spiritual journey. Since I didn't see any spirituality in the actual teachers I had, I decided that I was going to take a look and see what the Bible actually had to say about spirituality. You know, and so, and that led me to, actually, of all people, first Martin Luther King, then Mahatma Gandhi, who I studied intensively for years. I mean, I first read the Bible. I read the Bible cover to cover at the age of 9 because of my experience in Catholic school. But that led me to Martin Luther King. Then Martin Luther King led me to Gandhi. In 1974, I took what was called the Kali Chakra initiation in Tibetan Buddhism, which is an initiation into a mantra most of us have probably heard, Om Mani Padme Hum. In 1976, I moved to probably the largest spiritual community in the United States at the time, in Summertown, Tennessee. I lived there for 3 years. We were essentially a universal spiritual community. I mean, even though we had a very specific mindfulness practice that we used, and as part of that community, I went from, I the community was worldwide, and one of the first places I went was the South Bronx, where we created a award-winning free ambulance service in around 1977, and that that ambulance service, when we moved into the community at the indirect request of Jimmy Carter and Mother Teresa, that community had an average wait for an ambulance of 45 minutes, with waits of an hour and a half not being uncommon. We got that down to 7 minutes in our area, and we so embarrassed the city of New York that they revitalized, they revitalized and reformed their entire ambulance, their entire emergency management system, and put ambulances in all the firehouses for the first time. And after that, I left that community at the end of 1979, studied with Thich Nhat Hanh for a while, who died a few years ago. And I'll just end with something Willie Nelson said. I want everybody to think about one thing. What kind of world do you want to leave me and Keith Richards?